Welcome to Simple Living Works, episode 99. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host with my guests, Brother Christopher Markert and Brother Jeff Brown of the Order of Lutheran Franciscans. If you're new to this podcast and would like more basic information about Simple Living Works, please listen clear to the end. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye at my cue. In this 500th year of the Reformation, I relish taking a look at some of the lesser-known yet intriguing aspects of the Reformation. First, I talk with Chris Markert, the founder and Minister General of the OLF, the Order of Lutheran Franciscans. Here's Brother Chris, recently recorded. Well, Brother Chris, it's such a pleasure to speak to you as the founder and the General Minister or Minister General of the Order of Lutheran Franciscans. I am very fond of Franciscans. I've worked with Franciscans at Briarcliff University in Sioux City, Iowa, on a number of justice issues. We've spent many mornings demonstrating in front of the federal courthouse downtown, and so I feel very close to what you're doing. I'd like you to start by telling us what inspired you. Tell us the story of how the order began in the Lutheran, in America.
Well, it's good to be with you. I ended up going to seminary in Berkeley at Pacific Lutheran Theological Seminary, but I was late to the game because I had grown up Missouri Synod and was pre-sem in the Missouri Synod. So when I made the transfer to PLTS, there was no more seminary housing available. So they helped me procure some housing at what would become, Benedictine priory, an Episcopal Benedictine priory. And the brothers all lived on the first floor, and then the second and third floors were apartments that they rented out, like flats. And so I lived in one of the flats and became very acquainted with the brothers. We joined them occasionally for worship and just really got to see kind of a bird's eye view of life together in community. That's where I sort of was drawn to religious community, was in that experience in seminary. And then when I was awaiting first call, I was assigned to the Southeastern Pennsylvania Synod, where the ELCA deaconesses used to have a mother house. And while I was awaiting first call, they housed me at the mother house with the retired deaconesses, and again saw community up close and personal, and both the good and the bad, just the relationships and the beauty and the holiness of and the messiness of the relationships that happen in community. And so that caused me to start, during my first call, looking around to see what sort of religious communities existed, and I stumbled upon one out of the Episcopal Church and inquired with them, and realized that I wasn't particularly made for that community because of some of their requirements for how you do the daily office and who you practice obedience with. So I put that on hold until I ended up down in New Orleans for my second call, which got me revisiting, finding community beyond just my neighborhood and the church I served, and stumbled upon the Order of Ecumenical Franciscans and became a member of the OEF. And while I was with the OEF, an amazing group of people from all walks of Christian life, and from there, started to ask the question, why is there not an authentically Lutheran voice at the Franciscan table? And did some research. Some of my fellow siblings in the OEF helped, as well as some of my friends in the Episcopal orders. Stumbled upon some stories of generations of Franciscan communities that existed, Lutheran Franciscan communities that existed in Northern Europe, in Germany and Sweden and Norway, and decided that maybe God is calling for something here in our post-contemporary North American context. And with the help of some of my siblings in the OEF and the Third Order Society of St. Francis Episcopal, hammered out a general rule for a Lutheran Franciscan community here in the United States, and associated it with my congregation I was currently serving in Houston. We were wanting to be affiliated with the, I wanted it to be affiliated with the ELCA, so we started there. Put up a Facebook page and a website, and within a year there was about seven of us, and we met for our first annual chapter, and we prayed and discerned and said, yep, this is real. And that was 6 years ago. That was in 2011.
Well, if you would, please go with us the four foundational beliefs of the Franciscan Order that are in OLF.
Sure. So they're sort of the traditional Franciscan values, like our commitment to the poor and accompanying the poor. And there's care of creation and our commitment to creation care. There's ecumenical bridge building. That's part of both being Franciscan and being a part of the ELCA. Ecumenism is important. So we want to be bridge builders wherever possible. And then spiritual renewal and formation of the church. And that's just straight from Francis when he had his first vision where the voice called him to rebuild God's church. And at first he took it sort of literally and started rebuilding this dilapidated chapel, but over time began to realize he meant basically what we Lutherans would call reformation, reforming the church, because he saw the need of a spiritual renewal. And so we have this commitment to help the church in its spiritual renewal now.
Well, in the 500th year of the Reformation that we're celebrating this year, that seems particularly appropriate. Can you tell us how your order is fitting into this year's celebration?
So we have, that's a good question. We don't have any particular thing we are doing as an order. We are part of the Franciscan Action Network, which is a predominantly Roman Catholic organization that invited us to become institutional members of, that keep us connected to the larger Franciscan community. I do know that some of our siblings are hosting The Saint and the Sultan, a movie that was made, and working in communities to build, again, this is the ecumenical and interfaith bridge building, but some of them are doing it as actions in their synods as part of the 500th anniversary. We are going to be actively involved in the ELCA Youth Gathering in 2018 in Houston, which is beyond the 500th anniversary. But our actions right now have been twofold in our growth, as we're still technically fledgling as a community. We're wanting to continue to develop and cultivate our relationship with the larger Franciscan family. And we're wanting to deepen our affiliation and relationship with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. So those have been sort of our values or priorities in terms of where we focus our attention this year.
Well, it seems especially appropriate since the current Pope is named Francis.
Yeah.
And since the Pope Francis went to Sweden a year or so ago to rekindle relationships with the Lutheran Church globally, this seems entirely appropriate. I mean, Luther was, you know, the head of the Reformation as we know it, for which the Lutheran Church is named, and he was a member of a religious order.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things we get, because there was such heat against religious orders of his time, that how can there be Lutherans who are in religious orders? But we also know that we as Lutherans always have a unique way of approaching our understanding. Like for us, this is an extension of our baptism. We're practicing as Franciscans in our community in a way that when I talk to some members of the ELCA, they say, well, that's what all Christians should be doing. And we're like, yes, exactly. So it's not about being apart from the world, but rather, or from the church, but being in the church as those who have a particular way of living out our baptismal calling around these Franciscan charisms.
So you don't need to be a Lutheran pastor to be a member of your order, is that correct?
Absolutely not. In fact, up until about a year ago, we were pretty evenly distributed among men and women, lay and ordained. The oldest member is about 82. The youngest is 22.
And you do take the three vows. Tell us what those are again and how you live them out.
Sure. So the three vows are poverty, chastity, and obedience. And we say that we take a post-contemporary North American Lutheran interpretation of those vows. So when we talk about poverty, we talk about living simply, simplicity in living. How do we continually disengage ourselves from materialism and consumerism, and also how are we realigning ourselves with the poor of the world? So it's a commitment to not being caught up in consumerism and materialism and practicing living simply in the things we buy and where our priorities lie in the things we own or don't own. Our vow of chastity is a commitment to holiness in relationships. And so chastity doesn't mean celibacy unless that's the gift and calling for someone. It means being willing to be holy in the relationships we have with our spouse, our children, our boss, our neighbors, and striving to love all without distinction. And then the vow of obedience is really about accountability and vocation and allowing ourselves to be joyfully formed by the wisdom of others. And so that's how we understand the three vows and the OLF.
Now, do you have a bigger vision? Do you have a plan of where this order will be in 10 years, or is this just sort of evolving?
I would say yes to both of those things. We're not a congregation, so we're not in the business of proselytizing or recruiting. You know, we're already self-sustaining. Members of the community give as they are able to support the work that we do. And we have a few outside of our community that give generously to support us. But so we're not a church that has a building with an overhead or, someone has a salary that gets paid. And also we're looking at a time when we will have local contextual missions. So that's kind of the bigger dream, is contextualizing ourselves in a local place, which could look like having a mother house with a missional community connected to it, or a word and sacrament ministry attached to it, or maybe a retreat center. So finding the possibility of serving in a local community is part of our larger vision. And that's with the help of the ELCA Churchwide Domestic Mission Unit, where currently we have status as a congregation under development, which gives us some space to grow our relationship with the ELCA while figuring out what this means, because we're the first religious order of the ELCA, so we're trying to help the churchwide organization figure out how we relate. And so this gives us some space, being a congregation under development, though we're not technically a congregation in the traditional sense.
Now, you're called a brother or a friar. Later on in this podcast, I'll be talking to Jeff Brown, who is a novice. So how does Jeff move from being a novice to being a friar?
Well, Brother Jeff is already a brother. When you start the process of inquiry in the OLF, you are in postulancy, you're a postulant, and that lasts a minimum of 6 months. And there are six simple assignments, that formation assignments that you do around our general rule, to introduce you to our general rule and our way of life. And then after you complete postulancy, if there's mutual agreement that the person should move on, they apply. And make novice vows if approved, and the novice vows are annually renewable vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, and it's the first stage of membership in our order. And so when you make your novice vows, you receive the familiar title, whichever you want, brother, sister, or sibling, and you receive a Tau cross, which is your novice habit. And you can also wear the brown habit owl that's authorized for us in certain settings and circumstances. But you begin a process of 52 formation assignments with a formation counselor, and they introduce you to the, kind of the larger themes of Franciscan spirituality and Lutheran theology and how you will synthesize those in your walk. And while you're doing that, you're also expected to be meeting monthly with the spiritual director. So we have this lifestyle that we grow into, which is daily prayer, weekly Eucharist, monthly spiritual direction. Twice a year, we are expected to participate in private confession with an ordained minister, and then gathering with our community at annual chapter, which happens once a year.
Well, are there any other things you'd like to share about the order, about its founding, about its future, about its current work?
I would say that we are excited to be this experimental community of people who are practicing a particular way of living out our baptismal life together. And we have as kind of a priority for us helping the larger church learn more about this particular way of life. And you can always visit our website and or our Facebook page to learn a little more about us. And it's fun to hear people be surprised when they're at Synod Assembly. And at Synod Assembly worship, one of our siblings will be wearing their habit in worship, and the stories that come back from that. So if you happen to be around and meet one of our siblings, don't hesitate to walk up and introduce yourself and ask them questions, because they'd be more than willing to share. The deaconess community is probably the first real, authentic religious community in North American Lutheranism. These women had a mother house. Actually, there were three back in the old days, as you probably know. And they would make this... besides being like a rostered minister, they had to come and get to know the community. And I think it was 1967. Before then, they had to take a vow of celibacy. And they had a garb, a particular garb, and they were invested and were are called sister. And so there's this sense of me living with those deaconesses for 3 months while I was awaiting my first call. Really did give me a glimpse of what religious life could look like in a Lutheran context. And I am a huge advocate of the deaconess community and the work they do beyond just the rostered status of being a deacon, but also just this community of women that are bound together and care for one another.
You've been listening to my conversation with Chris Markert, Minister General of the Order of Lutheran Franciscans. Jeff Brown is a novice in the OLF. He's also a married, ordained pastor in the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. In our conversation, he tells the story of his faith journey and his work as a chaplain. My pleasure to speak to Jeff Brown, or Brother Jeff Brown, who is a novice in the Order of Lutheran Franciscans. So, Jeff, please tell us a little bit about how it came to be that you are joining the Order.
Yeah, thanks, Deacon Jerry, for having me on and this opportunity to speak to this. I think I can say pretty confidently that this journey with the Order of Lutheran Franciscans has changed my life in a big way, but it's also been kind of a natural piece for me here in my later 20s. I'm 28 now, but my later 20s, something that started in me years and years ago, the sort of sense of just not being attached to stuff so much. I have a different faith journey in terms of at least ELCA Lutheran understanding. I was not baptized until I was confirmed in the eighth grade. And so I remember the baptism very well. But for some reason, for whatever reason, being baptized that late kind of piqued my interest in reading scripture. Oddly enough, I don't know how many middle schoolers or high schoolers would say that, but for me, there was some sort of inner call there. And much like Francis of Assisi, when I read those words of Jesus about carry nothing for your journey, no wallet, you know, and the whole list that is there, I took that rather literally in a funny way. And I look back and I just kind of chuckle at it. I started getting rid of all my stuff, very much thinking, you know, I knew I had a mom and dad who were providing for me and life was stable, so I didn't need the other stuff. And I actually remember my mom, God bless her, love you, Mom, but she made a comment to me at one point that I remember so vividly. She said, "What, do you just want a cot on the floor of your room, you know, with everything else gone?" And I remember thinking, I didn't say it, but I remember thinking, well, yeah, that doesn't sound too bad. And this, I don't know what this was, the sense about just, I don't need the stuff. And so it wasn't until I was in seminary, Luther Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota, that I officially discovered the Lutheran Franciscans. Now, I had known about Francis of Assisi. I had known about religious orders. My college advisor was a Benedictine nun and a fantastic, fantastic lady. And so I'd known about it. I loved the idea of Francis of Assisi, but had no idea about the Lutheran Franciscans. So this was 2012 when I started, 2012, started seminary. And a year after the OLF was formed, and I was a sacristan for the chapel at Luther Seminary, and closed the chapel doors one day, sat in one of the back pews, and lo and behold, a few pews in front of me, there was somebody wearing a Lutheran Franciscans t-shirt, and I remember not paying much attention in chapel that day. Trying to rack my brain, wondering, what are the Lutheran Franciscans? What is this? I haven't ever heard of this. What in the world? And there was a website, so like a good millennial, I went and Googled it. And Googled it, found out not just Lutheran, but they claimed the ELCA Confession of Faith, and this was right in my backyard. What is this? But at that time in my life, I was newly married, expecting our first child, and life was busy, you know, starting seminary and figuring that whole journey out, which can be complicated. And so there was a lot going on in my personal life at that time. And as intrigued as I was by this idea of an ELCA religious order, I kind of tabled the idea and finished up seminary, concluded with my pastoral internship at a church in Fargo, North Dakota. And the first half of the year went really well, and so my supervisor and I started talking about different things we could do together since things were going well, and he suggested that we read books together, and so we did. And lo and behold, he comes across Father Richard Rohr, who is a fantastic Catholic priest, very ecumenically minded, spiritual teacher, and we read one of Richard's books called The Naked Now. It had just come out, Learning to See as the Mystic See. And I felt for the first time I had language for something that I had always felt deep down. And I didn't make the connection to this sort of simplicity in living right away. After we read The Naked Now, my supervisor said, "Well, if you like Richard Rohr, he's got a brand new one out. Let's do that one next." And that was Richard's book, Eager to Love. And that is his work on specifically Franciscan spirituality on St. Francis and St. Clare of Assisi. And I was home free. Everything clicked. Everything came together. Is, you know, I can imagine this sort of moment like Luther had when the scriptures opened up for him, and he said it felt like heaven opened up and rained down on him. And it felt like that for me a little bit. Like, I have had this sort of inner stirring for years and years and years. It would have been probably 10 years at that point. Some sort of inner stirring, you know, knowing about Francis, knowing about religious orders, and then here is something right here in my faith journey backyard, right here, and I jumped in and haven't looked back, and it's been an incredible journey.
I understand, Jeff, that you are now serving as a chaplain at two sites.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's I'm an ordained ELCA pastor and served a two-point rural parish for 2 years, and have come back in a way, and I'll explain that, but have come back to chaplaincy in Fargo and West Fargo, North Dakota. This is the same organization I did my clinical pastoral education with a few years ago. And it feels like I've come home a little bit in being back here with the same organization. I have the same senior chaplain that I worked with 4 years ago. And so it's been this has been a fun new journey too. And one that I feel, as we talk about living simply, I would brand this as working simply. As a pastor, I've always felt my call was really to be with people in the big moments of their lives. And one of the ones that the parish taught me was end of life in a big way, in a new way. And so when this chaplaincy position opened up, I wanted to explore that. But what I've discovered in my 2 months of doing this, only 2 months, so it's still brand new, is a sense of not having the same, if any, of the same administrative struggles or pulls or things like that that the parish sometimes has for pastors. To be pretty frank, I am freed up to simply love God and God's people, and so this idea of working simply, I'm just having a blast. This is a good time.
How does your spouse feel about simple living?
Yeah, this has been another fun aspect of the journey. So, you'll hear more about the OLF, but we take three vows they're the same vows that other religious orders take, whether they're Anglican, Episcopalian, Catholic, whatever they might be, and we take these vows of under the umbrella terms of poverty, chastity, and obedience, and they all get interpreted different ways. So one of the kind of kickers with this, as a, you know, I'm married and I'm a dad and a pastor, and so how I interpret these is a little different. And so we bump up against it sometimes. How, you know, I'm under vows, but my wife is not, and my family is not. And so what does this look like? So it's been a journey for my wife, and just understanding what this is about, in explaining where I am spiritually and how I in making sense of what I have felt has been a journey for most of my 28 years, and the majority of it, and just attempting to walk through this together when it comes up. But my wife, in some ways, is very prepared, especially as we talk about living simply at this vow of poverty idea. She has inspired me in such a big way, and I could thank Jackie very freely for continuing this this within me, because she's very frugal. She's very simply living minded, and I love her for it. It's so in some ways, I guess we journey together, though not, you know, officially under the guidance, both of us under the OLF.
In terms of obedience, who do you vow obedience to?
Very good. Obedience is a tricky one. They're all tricky. But we have this great line in our rule of life, and all religious orders have a rule of life, and we're no different. And there's a line in our rule that says, "The brothers and sisters of this order shall allow themselves to be joyfully formed by the wisdom of others." And that can be the order's leadership, congregational leadership, work supervisors, spouses, fellow siblings in the order. And there's another line, too. They will strive to keep their hearts from every tendency and yearning for possession and power. So as a pastor, my kind of go-to in terms of obedience, who am I obedient to? I'm obedient to, first of all, God. I mean, that's my baptismal vow. I'm obedient to my wife. There's my marriage vows. I'm obedient to the ELCA, Holy Scripture, Lutheran confessions, not in that order, you know, as part of my ordination vows. So I'm also obedient to my bishop. But I've also got these vows within the OLF. And so I am obedient to our minister general, our chaplain, our minister of formation, as well as the other brothers and sisters. Francis was a master at seeking humility and being a minority. In fact, the original brothers were called the Friars Minor. He very much sought out being a minor. In fact, it's thought that he even said once, "Do not seek to be undespised." Do not seek to be undespised. And so that seeking this place of being the lowest, in a sense, so that you're completely free to serve and to love. And so obedience is a good tie to poverty, generally speaking, to this idea of living simply.
Anything else you'd like to share with us, Brother Jeff, about the order or about your experience?
Yeah. My experience, I wasn't quite sure what to expect, but I can speak to this. I've been to two of our annual chapters. We meet once a year somewhere around the country because we're a dispersed order. We don't have a common house or a monastery or anything, and that's not Lutheran or Franciscan. So we're all over the country trying to live the gospel, and even into Canada too. I shouldn't just say the United States. So we really are all over. But once a year, we try to come together for 3 or 4 days and be together, be community face-to-face, so we don't have to rely on Facebook and email and texting, or even just phone calls. You know, we can actually be person-to-person together, brother-to-brother, sister-to-sister, all of the above. So my experience, I wasn't quite sure what I was getting into, if this would be, you know, we all have those stereotypes of religious orders, right? We all have those stereotypes, those things, those images that we just can't break out from. And I have found nothing but the most loving, free-spirited, gracious people I could ever ask for. And it's something powerful. And I this is just from my own experience. You have to experience it yourself to see it. But I have seen something powerful when a group of people come together, understanding this gospel call in a new way, as Francis heard it, to rebuild the church. When we're all together in that, that is powerful stuff. In fact, I would even go so far as to say, maybe as bold to say, that the OLF has taught me, in some ways, what the church should be. And that's not a condemnation on congregations or synods or seminaries or anything, or even my experience in all three. But there's something organically beautiful about what this order is doing and its mission to identify with the poor and the marginalized, and to bring this contemplative spirit into the ELCA. So I can't imagine my life without it, truly, and that sounds so dependent. So I'm maybe not all that poor, but it's taught me how to be spiritually rich, maybe is a good way to say it, as I seek to be materially poor, or at least simpler living. How then we are spiritually rich? Voluntary simplicity, I mean, that's such a good phrase. That's it in a nutshell. Choosing this because it's where Christ leads, and you said it, you've experienced it, you know what this is all about. It's a beautiful life, and it's a beautiful way of being freed up for the sake of the gospel.
You've been listening to my conversation with Brother Jeff Brown of the OLF. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on the Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org, click window number 3. Also, it really helps our visibility when you give Simple Living Works a 5-star review in iTunes. My colleague Lee Van Ham's new book has been released. Lee is the executive director of Jubilee One Earth Economics. Entitled From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable, it is volume 2 of Lee's trilogy called Eden for the 21st Century. I've read it, reviewed it, and highly recommend it. Lee and I talked about volume 1, Blinded by Progress, and volume 2 on podcasts. The links to those episodes are given in the show notes. I urge you to subscribe to one of Simple Living Works' free publications. Our blog, for example, includes the Weekly Digest and the Weekly Nudge. Just send the word blog to simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've begun a new series in the Weekly Nudge called Healthy Political Practices and Spiritual Disciplines. I hope this and my other recent short features add positively to the national conversation about social change and support the voluntary simplicity movement. Need a nudge? I've been producing today's Simpler Living Nudge for over a year and welcome you to subscribe for free. Receive it by email or Twitter. Just send me an email with the subject nudge at simplelivingworks@yahoo.com. I've received lots of interesting responses, which you can read on the simplelivingworks.org website. Click on Recent Comments in window number 5 or see the link in the show notes. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you're new to Simple Living Works and would like more basic information, please listen a little longer. If you're a regular, you may want to say goodbye here. Peace. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview, Backup, and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. Subscriptions to this podcast and to our weekly blogs are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook. You can also subscribe in iTunes to my other podcast, The Common Good Podcast, which I produce and co-host with Jubilee One Earth Economics. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. Thanks to the band Earth Mama and to John Pitney for the music on our show. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. We don't solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All of our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, comprehensive way of life. It's not a list of rules nor living on the cheap. It avoids fads, convenience, and deprivation. It's so much more than a hobby. We believe in abundance, that there's enough for everyone's needs, not anybody's greed. We follow the saying, live simply, that others may simply live, as our closing theme song proclaims. It's a balance of personal responsibility and advocacy for just social policy. It's more than personal happiness, though that's quite important. As you may sense, we put a strong emphasis on social justice. Contemporary faith-based simple living is guided by the 5 life standards of Living More with Less, the classic by Doris Jansen Longacre. I've discussed these standards in earlier episodes. The mission of Simple Living Works is equipping people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We extend the mission and resources of the nonprofit organization Alternatives, which served from 1973 to 2011. The three parts of our mission are elaborated in text and video. Links are listed in the show notes. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. Mm-hmm.